Welcome to the Wendell Forum, a weekly program where we focus on the green economy, what's happening and what's interesting. We'll look at the business and legal sides of clean tech, renewable energy, natural foods, organic products, social investment, and green building. I'm Dick Lyons, host of the Wendell Forum and co-founder of the Sustainable Business Practice Group at Wendell Rosen Black & Dean, the leading law firm for green business. My guest today is Ted Coe. Ted is Associate Director of the Clean Coalition. Ted, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
The Clean Coalition is a San Francisco-based organization. It's a nonprofit, and its mission is to implement policies and programs that help transition the economy to cost-effective clean energy while delivering economic benefits. And Ted has a great background for his position as Associate Director. He's co-founder of the Clean Coalition, and he oversees policy development and strategy both for regulatory and legislative efforts. As well, he's a tech industry veteran. He's worked on startups as well as working for large internet companies such as Yahoo. He has a BS and an MS in computer science from MIT and an MBA in the sustainable management from the Presidio Graduate School, which has a very good graduate program in sustainable management. So, Ted, I want to start off. I just mentioned generally what the Clean Coalition does, but could you provide us with more detail?
Sure. Thanks, Dick. The Clean Coalition really focuses on fixing the problems and issues facing people who are looking to build small to medium scale clean local energy projects. So wind farms, solar farms, even biogas, any kind of clean energy generation project, and helping those projects, or making sure that the policies, the laws, the regulations make it easier and faster and cheaper to go ahead and build those projects.
Mm-hmm.
So we advocate for policy change at the local, state, and even federal level sometimes, just wherever the market needs it.
Mm-hmm. And so by focusing on smaller local projects, we get into the concept of distributed production, distributed generation around the grid. And could you describe for our listeners some of the benefits? Because that's obviously one of the objectives. What are the benefits of having, let's say, 10,000 small local generating systems compared to three large plants?
Absolutely. So one of the reasons we focus on this on our mission is we went out and looked around the world as to what's the best way to get cost-effective clean energy that actually gives you the most benefits to your communities. And seeing that the previous paradigm that most people operated on, or the energy industry overall has operated on for a long time, has been large-scale power generation, sending energy over long transmission lines. And we realized that in the clean energy future that we're trying to get to, we want to do a couple things. One is get energy more democratized, make it more accessible to your local community. And for one, the first benefit you get from that is, one, you don't lose energy transmitting it over long distances. So that's the number one. That's one of the number one issues. Another issue that helps make local clean energy more valuable is that you can actually build it more quickly. If you're really looking to transition us to a smart energy, clean energy future in our country, you want to be able to put out projects that can get built relatively quickly, don't run into all sorts of environmental and legal problems and rights of way and different lands and impacts on the environment. You can get built a lot more quickly if you can do those in small projects on land near your community that's already disturbed, and get the benefits of that clean energy and reducing greenhouse gases more quickly. So just mm-hmm. purely from an energy point of view and trying to get more clean energy more quickly, a lot more small local projects is going to get you there a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Then beyond that, of course, there's the local community economic benefits in creating jobs, in your communities and bringing up the market and the job force in how to build, install, set up these systems in your local communities rather than, again, hundreds of miles away.
Right. And you mentioned losses from running power tens or hundreds of miles from generating plants to users. Can you, is there any rough quantification? I don't think people really understand when they see these transmission towers going across California, the amount of power that's lost simply by transporting electricity long distance. And again, by amount, I'm thinking, maybe a percentage.
Yeah, absolutely. In California, we estimate the combination of sending over the long transmission towers and even sending from the transmission lines over some of your local lines to your, to where you use the power can be up to 8 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So you can lose 8 to 10% of your energy just transmitting it those distances.
Mm-hmm. Which is a substantial amount when you're dealing with large amounts of energy.
Yeah.
And you mentioned one of the benefits of these local programs is that you avoid the permitting and construction issues for new plants, and that also goes to permitting and construction of new transmission lines. In California, we have something of a transmission line constraint. Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely true. The one of the biggest problems with the model for large-scale, what's called central station generation, is that you need to build those lines, those big transmission lines, if you don't have enough already in place. Those transmission lines, even in the, if you have to start from scratch, you have to build a new transmission line, that takes at a minimum of 10 years to build a new transmission line, and that's if everything goes really well. So
mm-hmm.
that's 10 years and billions of dollars that...
Right, which is additional cost added to the project.
It's added to the project. Actually, it's added to your bill. Your electricity
yes,
bill.
That's right.
Because the ratepayer, the person paying for energy, pay for those transmission lines.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's look at the local level. As far as the small renewable generating facilities that tend to be installed in communities. What size are we talking about as far as kilowatts?
Well, we look at all the way down from the really smallest projects are your say 1 kilowatt or 2 kilowatt home rooftop, all the way up to 5 even 10 megawatts. 10 megawatts is getting pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
For say a solar system, for example, you need maybe. 10 megawatts, you probably need 50 to 75 acres of land for that,
mm-hmm.
Which is you can find in places, say, like a capped landfill or some other thing like that, or even old agricultural land that isn't usable for growing things anymore. You can find that kind of acreage.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the typical, we're thinking, for most communities around California, we're going to see a lot of the 500 kW up to 1 to 2 megawatts, maybe 3 megawatts range.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned as far as the types of power sources, solar, wind, I think you mentioned fuel cells, biogas.
Mm-hmm.
My impression of these programs is that probably the bulk of the generating power is coming from solar power.
For a lot of the programs that we work on,
mm-hmm.
What we call the CLEAN programs, and CLEAN stands for Clean Local Energy Accessible Now. These programs were designed to be technology agnostic for the most part, but in a lot of cases, especially in California where we have such abundant sun, we actually, a lot of these programs are mostly taken up by solar PV
mm-hmm.
as the main technology.
Mm-hmm. And how are they funded?
So usually what happens is these programs are funded by the electricity bills, the rates, the electricity rates, and not by a government subsidy. So it's not a government program or taxpayer dollars that go into these programs. It usually comes off the it's shared
mm-hmm.
across everybody's electric bill across the state.
Mm-hmm.
Or across the municipal, depending on your utility, which utility company. If you have a local municipal utility, then it's across
mm-hmm.
your utility customers.
Now, one of the challenges to these small projects, in my experience, is that it often seems like each one has to be done on a custom basis with custom contracts and so on. And so you know, the costs of putting, the transaction costs of putting together a project, I think are one of the impediments to small projects.
Absolutely. And when your transaction costs start getting too high relative to the, you know, how much money the project is, then it starts becoming really difficult to build them, no question. One of the things that we advocate for, is one of the major areas we push for, is to standardize and simplify those contracts. So make it easier, quicker, and if they're standard across all the different utilities, across all different cities or jurisdictions, then it'll be much clearer and much simpler to go ahead and you know, develop and build a system. We see that even California, with the highly successful California Solar Initiative, and those kind of programs for putting up solar on your rooftop, for example, even that, you know, the paperwork involved in that is still in the hundreds of pages range, versus say the clean program in Germany, where they do, you know, thousands of these projects also in the small range. Their basic form and application is 4 pages long.
Right, and that's really what it should be for these small projects. It shouldn't require that everybody get lawyers, and I can say that because I am a lawyer. But the costs are unreasonable relative to the size of the project. It really needs standardization, and it's hard for us to believe here in California that it could be done with 4 pages. But I can imagine in a more enlightened regulatory environment that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we definitely have our different challenges in terms of, you know, our society's approach towards these contracts and litigation, those kind of things. That probably means that we typically need a little more paperwork than, say, Germany does. But at the same time, you know, I'll admit that if we, the Clean Coalition, are successful in what we do, then there is less work for lawyers like yourself in terms of these projects, at least.
Well, that can be a good thing. One of the other challenges, I think, is dealing with the each utility and interconnecting the project with the utilities lines.
That's one of the largest barriers of what we've been finding out has been the problem that we need to tackle. So the Clean Coalition originally was founded to work on. Again, those contracts, the agreement on you know, purchasing the energy, simplifying that, standardizing it, and getting a good price for people who put up solar farms to sell their energy, and that's still a large part of what we do. But then we found out that one of the biggest problems in California is actually that what you just said, interconnection or grid access.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how good a contract you have or how much you're getting paid from the contract if you can't actually plug in. So. Mm-hmm. We're probably, I would say, one of the most active groups in California, if not the loudest, in reforming those procedures, the rules and the regulations around how you plug into the grid, how you put up equipment and make sure that the grid is stable and you're not damaging anything on the grid,
mm-hmm.
And getting that whole process done, which unfortunately for some of these projects can take years.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you have a relatively small, say, 1 megawatt project, and you got everything, did everything right, you got the permits, you got the contracts, you're ready to go, you got your panels, but you can't plug in for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This can easily kill your project,
mm-hmm.
and is probably one of the biggest barriers to, I would say, hundreds of megawatts in California right now are blocked because of those issues, if not thousands of megawatts.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can generalize, but do you find it's easier for them to deal with municipal utilities or with the one of the three large investor-owned utilities?
We found for these kind of project developers, if you're building a solar farm in this, or any kind of clean energy generation in this kind of range, it's typically a lot easier to deal with the municipal utilities, your local utility. They tend to have a lot more flexibility, a lot more, close contact with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also typically not as overwhelmed with the amount of people trying to connect, trying to build projects and connect into their system. So one of the issues, actually, this goes directly to what you just said about interconnection. One of the great things about Sacramento, the SMUD, Sacramento
yes.
Municipal Utility District, is they processed, I can't remember how many projects it was. It was probably like 20 or 30 projects who wanted to interconnect to their system, and they processed that with, you know, two people in about 2 months. Whereas, you know, the same kind of thing at, say, PG&E or Southern California Edison, it can, like I said, it can take 6 months, a year, year and a half, to also process the same interconnection application.
Mm-hmm. And we should, you know, we should give a special recommendation for SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, because it's been a leader in renewable energy for probably, I don't know, maybe 30 years.
Yeah, absolutely. We as an organization, we hold them up as an example all the time
mm-hmm.
on how this is the way you should do things. This is how you should, especially on the interconnection side, this is how you should do interconnection. They're pretty proactive in a lot of ways in experimenting with new programs. They did, you know, they were the first of the municipal utilities to do one of these clean programs for their community
mm-hmm.
And in California. And, yeah, they're a great example, mm-hmm. and we definitely applaud them.
Now, one of the issues that arises with having, you know, lots of small projects on the grid is, you know, the ability of the utilities to manage generation. I mean, as you know, consumption varies during the day and depending on the weather conditions. And so utilities will turn on and off. They'll dispatch plants depending on the need for power. How do you manage that if you've got, let's say, 10,000 small solar installations and too much power is going into the grid?
So this is one of the biggest topics of discussion in California right now and across the country. What we see from the Clean Coalition's point of view is we're not at the penetration level in terms of the amount of energy of distributed generation on the grid now
mm-hmm.
to cause significant problems yet.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're looking forward, we understand, you know, the grid wasn't well designed for this. And the management of the grid, I mean, in a lot of ways, the grid is still, you know, based on the, you know, 100-year-old design of and mm-hmm. some very old technology on the grid itself right now. So the combination of, the way to look at it is the combination of what everybody calls smart grid technologies combined with high penetrations of distributed generation is where we're going in the future. And so what we can do is, if we want to get lots and lots of clean local energy, we're going to need the smart grid technologies that are being developed and installed right now to work with that all that clean local energy to make sure you're balancing your energy and, you know, meeting supply and demand at the local level. And that's the combination of those two topics is extremely important, extremely important for policymakers and regulators to go look at, okay, how are we designing our rules so that we're looking towards a combined future with those two topic areas.
Mm-hmm.
We, as a Clean Coalition, again, this is part of our evolution as of our organization, is we're actually one of the first organizations to be talking about that combination, smart grid plus clean local energy, and how the policies have to talk to each other and work in concert in order for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. And is this area, the smart grid, is this one where you see that there can be a lot of different kinds of economic activity as different companies start up to address various aspects of the communication and management of the generation and so on?
Definitely. When we get all this smart grid technology, and the technology itself is, there are all new business models around the technology, but then there's a whole new business models around energy management that will be enabled by the fact that you have the smart grid technology installed in your grid. So if you know and can control and can monitor the energy flows anywhere on your grid at a very fine, detailed level, then there's a whole lot of different business models that you can then create for what you can do with that information. For example, one of the big things going on now is electric vehicles. So if you think about having electric vehicles, it's not just plug it in and charge it.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you plug it into the smart grid, you can manage your charging. You can even send energy back into the grid so that when the grid needs it, and enable completely new business models about how to manage your EV as more than just something that you charge every night, mm-hmm. but you can actually even provide services and get compensated for services you're providing to the grid from your EV.
Mm-hmm. And that that brings up the concept of storage. Obviously, solar generates power during the day, and wind generates power when the wind is blowing. And so, as far as matching generation and demand for power, a lot of people are working on the problem of how do you store the power which is generated by renewables so that it can be put back into the grid at a time when it's needed most. What do you see in this area? I mean, are we going to see some major breakthroughs in the cost of storing energy?
I think we will. A lot of people have recognized in the last few years that energy storage and hopefully, local distributed energy storage on a relatively small scale is going to be critical. And if we're looking at this clean local energy future where you're managing and balancing your energy locally, you're absolutely going to need good, cost-effective energy storage. So there's directions from all the way from the federal government, the Department of Energy, all the way down to local policies around and demonstration projects around how to push the envelope on energy storage technologies, and that there's so many of them now that we don't fully track that industry right
mm-hmm,
now, but
sure.
there's a lot going on in terms of pushing that forward. And there's also legislation, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, from Assemblywoman Skinner about energy storage, about requiring the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission in California, to start looking at how to develop energy storage plans and what kind of requirements we need to put on the grid,
mm-hmm.
And start thinking about that now and not wait till it starts becoming really critical.
Mm-hmm. And let's turn back to the Clean Coalition again for a moment to focus on your organization. So, mm-hmm. So what are the what are some of the top initiatives that the Clean Coalition is taking on right now?
Right. So we do work at, like I said before, everything from the local municipal level all the way up to the federal level. I think the biggest ones that are really active right now is at the local level, starting there, is working with local municipal utilities and having them launch their own clean programs that somewhat mirror the success in Germany,
mm-hmm.
or more closer to home, mirror some of the successes we've seen in places like Gainesville, Florida, or SMUD. Cities that have put up their own clean programs to boost the development of clean local energy. One of the things that we're hoping to celebrate soon is the Palo Alto utility, which will hopefully be launching a clean program within the next several months. And that's one that we work directly with them on in terms of helping them design and figure out how to design that program.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big ones. So we have, the Clean Coalition actually has put out what we call the Local Clean Program Guide, which is a free how-to manual for any city that has a municipal utility that wants to look at designing a clean program for their city. And that's available on our website, download for free. And then we're happy to talk to any city that wants to talk through it and go through the process. So that's one of the largest initiatives we have right now. On the state level, we're doing both a lot of work on what we talked about before, interconnection reform,
mm-hmm,
changing the rules
right.
around that. Very intensely working on that. At the same time, we're working on several bills in the California legislature with the deadline for we're going to be introducing, or we have introduced with several very energy-minded policymakers in Sacramento, some bills to, again, reform interconnection processes, look at more of the distribution grid and how we can improve things, and look at more clean programs across the state. So to try to reach the governor's goal of 12,000 megawatts of distributed generation.
Mm-hmm. And even though these sound like kind of arcane topics, in fact, these are the things that need to be put into place in order for large numbers of these distributed plants, these local power plants, to be installed.
Absolutely. I, We suffer, honestly, we suffer a little bit from the fact that it's not easy to explain a lot of these things in relatively straightforward language. I mean, we can't just say, you know, a million solar roofs like was on before. That's fairly easy and accessible. A lot of the work we do is kind of down in the trenches, the details of the regulations that gets very, you know, very complex and very nuanced in legal terms. So
right,
you won't necessarily see, for example, the legislative bill, the bills that we're looking to promote this year in the legislature, you won't see large public campaigns about these bills because it just, we don't think it's something that the general public will be super excited about.
Right, but they will be excited about the results, because the results will ultimately be many, many more units of renewable energy being installed at a local level, you know, in California. And that's going to, as you say, lead to a variety of benefits. It's more efficient, it's more flexible, it's more manageable. It avoids both the cost of construction and the cost of permitting and the, you know, adverse environmental effects of building large central plants and of building transmission lines. So although it's not, although these things, as you say, are not immediately apparent to people, we will see the fruits of them. And we're wrapping up, Ted, so I want to thank you, you know, so much for coming in and talking to us about the Clean Coalition. And for our listeners, you can go to the clean-coalition.org to learn more about what they're doing. And the listeners, we also want to thank you for tuning into the Wendell Forum, where we focus on the green economy, you know, what's happening, what's interesting. And to catch up on past episodes of the Forum, you can go to our blog at www.thewendellforum, and Wendell is spelled W-E-N-D-E-L, forum.com, where you can find podcasts of our prior shows. And you can also stay updated with us at Wendell Rosen by liking us on Facebook or following us on Twitter. I'm Dick Lyons, co-founder of the Sustainable Business Practice Group at Wendell Rosen, Black & Dean, and host of the Wendell Forum. Thanks for listening, and see you next Saturday.